Thanks, John. Now we're into Galway Thoughts, and we have two guests joining us today, two senators indeed, Senator Lisa Chambers and Senator Pauline O'Reilly, and they're both going forward indeed in the forthcoming European elections. We'll be looking at a number of issues today, and Ukraine Gaza situation, the commercial vacancy rates, and also Saoirse Ruan as well. Morning to you both, senators. Thank you for joining us today. John, morning to you again. Thanks for joining us today. Can I start, though, with Ukraine Gaza situation, and can I start with you, Senator Pauline O'Reilly, what's your take on it? I mean, Joe Biden, I don't know, to see it last night, was very strong last night, talking about building a pier. We spoke to a friend of ours that lives in Gaza, has left and gone to Egypt, and she said that pier is going to take too long and too many people are dying.
Yeah, I mean, the entire world is outraged, and yet it feels that the US is far behind what public opinion is
that because he's Israel, because he's trying to keep Israel happy and he's trying to be seen to support Gaza?
I think it is. I think it's two things. I think one is he's trying to keep a certain section of his own electorate happy. The other is money. You know, quite frankly, it's money and the amount of financial links with Israel. So that's where I think we've arrived at this. But if action had been taken more quickly, I don't think that the public would be turning against him. But look, I think, you know, the Europe also has a lot of questions to ask, and we can see that certainly with Ursula von der Leyen, I don't think it was good to put her in again for a second term. I certainly don't believe that she has been strong when it comes to Gaza. So it's not just the US, let's be honest about it. It's also the US, and Ireland is an outlier. We have been really...
We've been slow as well, though, haven't we?
Well, I mean, we're one of the few countries now that has
now,
been...
That is
supporting UNRWA. Yeah. I don't believe that we can say that Ireland has been slow. Acting alone is never going to achieve everything. Okay. So I think that we have to put as much pressure as we can.
Okay, Senator Lisa Chambers, I mean, Hamas effectively started this, and then is it fair to say that Israel then just rolled in and did what they wanted to do for many years?
Look, it's a very complex conflict that's been going on for years and years and decades, so it didn't just start on October 7th, but that is the current phase, I suppose, of this conflict began on that date. And at the time, on October 7th, that attack by Hamas in Israel, I had huge sympathy for the Israeli people. I remember there are still... 150 odd hostages still, we don't know if they're alive, to be honest.
Yeah.
And they're innocent people, and we need those hostages released. But I think it's fair to say Israel have lost the room now. Their response has been so disproportionate. It is the scale of it, 30,000 plus people dead, many of them children, and forced starvation, famine, even the displacement of people. They've been funneling people into Rafah, and then they fire on them in Rafah, the last place the last place of refuge. And then they say they've given warning for them to move, but to move to where?
Where do you go when you're
there's nowhere to go. What's unusual about this situation is that it's very unusual that in a conflict zone, the people can't get out.
Yeah.
Okay, people cannot get out. The only other border is with Egypt, and that border is closed, the Rafah crossing.
But, I mean, the loss of life, and we all have family and we all know what's going on, but the loss of life, there's absolutely no cost to life in this dispute currently.
I think when it comes to the Palestinian issue, Ireland has long been, I suppose, connected to the Palestinian people. We feel an affinity with them because they are, because they're occupied, and we look at our own history. So there is that connection there. There are very few international issues that grab the hearts and minds of the Irish people, and this is one of them. You said, Keith, there that you felt Ireland was maybe, or it's been suggested that Ireland has been slow. I would absolutely outright reject that. We have been, as a small member state.
I'm giving you my opinion,
I suppose. But as a small member state, as a small member state, I think we've done a really good job, and people are so upset about this. I think it's important that our government and our country are doing a good job. We were one of the first countries to come out and say we wanted a ceasefire. We were one of only four member states at the outset of this conflict to block a resolution to stop aid going to Palestine. Ireland was one of four. We've joined with the Spanish now. We've written to Ursula von der Leyen to ask that the EU-Israel trade agreement have an urgent review because we want sanctions.
Yeah.
So we are really an outlier on this. And I think when we look at Ursula von der Leyen going for a second term, people need to be aware that the European People's Party, of which Fine Gael are a member, are supporting that. The Irish people are not supportive of that. That's what I get back, because she did kind of go off on a tangent by herself, purporting to represent the Union and the Commission, which she was not doing at the time, and visited Israel and has really taken I think an imbalanced view is my view, in that she hasn't been pushing hard enough for a ceasefire and to get aid into people. There are children dying in Palestine every single day in Gaza.
Yeah.
And I think the EU haven't done enough. Some countries have been very good, Ireland one of them. And ultimately, we are looking to the US because the reality of it is that Israel will only listen to the US. And Joe Biden, I think, unfortunately, has done himself a lot of damage with being so... And I'm a big fan of Joe Biden's. You know, he's got Mayo connections, West of Ireland connections. But the power is with him and his administration. Yeah. And today, to date, they have failed to deliver a ceasefire.
Okay, but Senator Pauline O'Reilly, we're talking about this here on this Friday morning. And John, your mic is open as well. But I can guarantee the phone lines outside are hopping saying that we're wrong talking about it. You know, if you're talking about Palestine, the Israeli people are giving out to you. You know, there's two sides to this story and there has to be a resolution sometime.
Well, I mean, at the moment, I think the two sides are unbalanced and that's the issue here.
It's a good way of putting it.
We absolutely have to speak as loudly as we can about the plight of people in Gaza all of the time, every day, when we can. I think one of the difficulties is that we in Ireland feel frustrated, I guess, at the lack of response from the international community, and as if we're almost going it alone. And we are, to a certain extent, as Lisa has said, there's only a few countries. But I also think that the decision to stop supporting UNRWA, which was actually one of the few organisations that was providing aid by the European Union, was a disastrous decision. And so Ireland and this government has stepped in and is providing funding of 20 million. And that's, but in the end of the day, who should be paying for the destruction? It should be Israel itself.
Mm.
And in my view, there are war crimes being committed. And
that's going to take 10-15 years to prove.
Absolutely. And that's,
they'll all be,
that's
gone.
The longer term.
There'll be a new regime in.
Absolutely. And that's the longer term issue here. But at the moment, it is about the people
supporting
who are dying on a day-to-day basis. That's why I think number one has to be the ceasefire.
Mm. I suppose tantamount, John, to it is we had Osra Martin with us earlier on the programme. But we were at this since 8 o'clock this morning to 9 o'clock trying to make contact with her.
Yep.
Such is the dilemma that she's in, or with her family, her husband, her two children. She luckily got out. They had to raise €16,000 to get her out. She's in Cairo since the night before last.
Mm.
Like, that's what they're living with over there.
That's day-to-day reality. And I suppose we heard President Biden's address last night, and a part of that was trying to get this maritime corridor, get this port open. That's going to take a few weeks to get on the ground.
2 weeks?
He mentioned partners that'll be helping him in that endeavour. They have started to come out of the woodwork this morning. The UK will help to open the maritime corridor. They said it's to tackle the desperate humanitarian need for it. They've also urged Israel to allow more trucks into Gaza as the fastest way to get aid into those who badly need it. Starvation is the big risk here. There's 30,000 people who could be put into starvation.
Starvation is a nice soft word. It's a famine.
Yeah.
It's a man-made famine.
It's a man-made famine.
In terms of the food situation there, Jordan has been leading on this, and there are airdrops of supplies into Gaza. This is where it's at now because we can't get in, particularly in northern Gaza, because the UN agencies are not even operating there now.
That's right.
And the Irish government is in talks with Jordan to try and assist in that airdrop to try and get aid in as well.
Mm.
And the EU Commission have just announced 50 million to UNRWA as well, which I think is really welcome because they had pulled back from UNRWA because of that accusation that staff members
involved,
had been involved in the October 7th attacks.
And
so,
again, a few shouldn't ruin it for the majority.
No, but
a few
even
staff members.
I mean, in terms of balance as well, Keith, we have yet to see evidence of their participation. Maybe it's not true.
But,
and I get the point you're making as well about balance towards Israel. And I want to make the point that there are lots of decent, ordinary people in Israel that are waiting for family members to come home.
Absolutely.
And lost people.
There's
so
two sides to this.
There is. And I suppose because Israel is the bigger military power, it's kind of a David and Goliath style situation. And
it is,
they are the bigger power. They have a president in Netanyahu that I think is looking at his own political career, and he knows when the war ends, he's gone. And that's the political situation there for them.
But
it's a two-state solution is what we're supporting, and both countries have a right to exist.
And that's under a bit of threat as well, because we do see that Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories have been expanded by a record amount.
Yeah.
And the UN human rights chief, Volker Turk, he has said the expansion risks eliminating any practical possibility of a Palestinian state. He's also described the move as a war crime. That's the UN human rights chief That's a very strong statement from
a body like that.
As I said,
Senator O'Reilly is going to take 10, 15 years
to
prove this.
But I think that that is part of what's going on here. It's not only about, and look, I absolutely feel huge sympathy for the attack on October 7th, but I think part of this is a land grab, and it is to take it over and to only have one state in the end of that. I mean, there effectively is now.
When Lisa started talking, I said, look at what Hamas did was wrong, but then Israel just took control of the situation
and the people are irrelevant almost. Yeah. That's the way it feels.
The thing is, it is wider than this as well, because you have to look at it in the context of the wider Middle Eastern conflict. You have Israel there, we say that they are the bigger power and all that, and they have US backing, etc., etc. But there are other aspects to this, the likes of Hezbollah in Lebanon, and also other Iran-aligned regional alliances all surrounding them. Yeah. And there's other Arab nations that are not too happy with them as well. So there is a paranoia there for Israel. They haven't many friends in the area they're actually located.
And you mentioned Hezbollah. We have Irish troops serving in Lebanon.
That's right. And
about 320 troops there at the minute, which we're very much concerned about. And on a daily basis, there are rockets being fired by Hezbollah, and then there's retaliatory rockets from Israel
and
over the Irish camp. Yeah. So it's a really volatile situation.
But can we just pause on that and look on the other side then, what's happening between Ukraine and Russia? And like, that's another loss of life in our lifetime.
It's huge, and what, you know, what I suppose what happens with these conflicts, they go on so long that people stop talking about it. But actually the same level of loss of life is happening in Ukraine. And organisations are having to pull out of the area. There doesn't seem to be any short-term resolution. And I think Irish people have stepped up to the mark when it comes to Ukraine.
Absolutely.
Also feel a real sympathy.
And our government stepped up.
Absolutely. And remember how many Ukrainians we have in our children's school. I certainly know my own children's school. But not only Ukraine, we've got Moldova, we've got the whole region that feels a sense of being under threat.
But we're talking about a ceasefire in Gaza and all that goes with it. And we're looking still, and Mr. Putin is still doing what he wants to do. And it's still, I mean, okay, America are giving Ukraine loads of weaponry and all that. He has loads of weaponry as well. But there's the loss of life, you know, that's what's really and truly, we saw it happening in our own country many, many years ago in the north. The loss of life, somebody has to be held responsible.
We only just recently had statements in the Oireachtas to mark the 2-year anniversary of the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. It's two years. And, you know, there's, I think it's difficult to see a way back from where we are now with that particular conflict. And the longer it goes on, the less appetite there is to keep providing Ukraine with the support that it needs. We saw that with the blockage of funds from Congress in the US to Ukraine. And I think it is deeply worrying. And I think sometimes it can be missed in Ireland. You know, we're concerned about it because there is war on the borders of Europe, not necessarily in the European Union, but Ukraine is a candidate country. But for countries bordering Ukraine, this is an existential crisis for them. We have two new members of NATO. Countries on the border there are worrying, you know, if Putin does take Ukraine, where is he going to go next? Because do we think he's going to stop where he is, and that'll be enough.
But look what happened within his own country. Like, what to the opposition?
Well,
leader.
Navalny, absolutely. Like, I mean, there is no opposition.
Look, his wife can't go back in there. Yeah. His mother has been harassed. We're not going to solve it all today. What I'm going to do is take a short commercial break, and we're going to come back. But if you want to pose questions to either of our guests today, Senator Lisa Chambers and Senator Pauline O'Reilly, do so to 0917700077. We're back just after these, and comment lines are open. Now, welcome back into Galway Thoughts, and I'm joined by Senator Lisa Chambers and Senator Pauline O'Reilly joining us today. The loss of, or the passing of Saoirse Ruan is covered in all of today's newspapers, guys, and her legacy, really, she's left Pauline. I know as a parent it's awful tough to see a young child of 12 years of age passing away like that, but she has left a legacy.
She's left a huge legacy, and I know that at the moment that's not, you know, huge comfort to family
and
friends, but it's a real service, I think, to the whole community, not just across Galway, but across the country. But I just did want to just say, you know, my thoughts are obviously with the family, but also with all of the kids around Saoirse, who would have known her in school, and I know my own colleague Owen Madden's kids are in the school, and it's a really tough time for them as well. It brings home, I suppose, the you know, the vulnerability that...
Fragility of life.
Of life, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Such a young, tender age. But everybody that I've spoken to has said what a beautiful, kind child she was. And indeed, this time last year, we were preparing to go into the parade, the Galway St. Patrick's Day parade, and she was sitting with us in the stand. And just thinking back to this time last year and how well she certainly seemed at the time, mm-hmm. 1 year later, how everything can change.
But she was with me and she got a Galway Person of the Year award in November. Yes. She was in great form that night.
Yeah.
She really was in great form. But that's life. But Lisa, I mean, it strikes a lot of families. A lot of families go through what Saoirse's family have gone through, but she's made an impact and she's raised a lot of money.
It's just heartbreaking. I can't even imagine as a parent, you know, because you often just think, oh, you always think of your own child, then how would you cope?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I suppose people find strength from somewhere to go through these types of situations and the trauma that goes with it.
Mm.
And Saoirse battled for so long. She was sick for a long time and always put the best foot out. And the toy show appeal, that legacy and the amount of money that's been raised. I was watching a clip of her recently on social media, you know, around this news, I suppose, when it broke. Of herself and Ryan Tuberty, and she was just, you know, a gorgeous little girl and a huge loss, and for her mum and dad and her siblings and her friends, like, it's just a devastating
grandparents
loss.
It is, yet.
Yeah.
Today now, I know that she's reposing today, then she's with mum and dad and the family until Sunday, and then the mass on Sunday, so it's a long weekend for them as they bid farewell to her, so may she rest in peace.
Absolutely.
Can I just come back? You mentioned social media. Is social media going to be the big thing when it comes to European elections? Or could one dare ask you?
I think, you know, I think really it's become, it's growing in terms of its importance to campaigns.
But is it having an impact?
It will have an impact. It'll be a significant element, I think, of every European candidate's campaign, particularly for European elections, because for our constituency of Midlands Northwest, that myself and Pauline are contesting in, it's 15 counties. So you physically can't get to every door. So how do you reach people to let them know you're running? Try and get them to know your name and get your message out there.
If you take the social media, and John, your mic is open as well, is it not a lot of the younger people that are on social media, people my age that will be voting for whoever I decide to vote for? I mean, social media is not going to make the decision for me.
It's different platforms for different age groups, actually, we've kind of figured out. Like my mum, for example, would be on Facebook, and she loves going on Facebook to see what's happening in the local community. My preferred platform as somebody in my 30s is Instagram. But then if I go to my younger sister, she's on TikTok. So different age groups.
Your house is very intelligent. What are you doing, Pauline?
Of course, another really important one is LinkedIn.
That's making an impact.
There's quite a big impact there, and that's all ages. Mm. But I think it's important.
Twitter,
oh God, don't mention it.
I know.
Excuse me, Senator.
It's toxic, whatever you call it.
Is it that bad? I'm not on
it.
It
is, yeah.
Is
it's
it?
Like, for us as politicians, it's the, if you want to go and get kicked around the place and abused, put something on Twitter or X. But unfortunately, in our job, you have to engage on these platforms because they're now seen as an important tool of contacting people. See, I'd love to disengage from it and turn it off and delete it off my phone, but it doesn't feel like an option for us, really.
I think one of the things about, as you say, it's different platforms for
different purposes. People, yeah.
So one of the difficulties I have is that with X, it seems that a lot of, certainly the national journalists, they look for all of their news on X, and it's not that you're necessarily reaching out to your own electorate.
Is that a lazy way of doing it, though?
I think that it's about gauging maybe public opinion, but I don't believe that it is reflective of public opinion. Mm. I don't believe that X is.
I think, certainly
in our constituency of Midlands Northwest, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on local radio, but I do think local radio is critical, is critically important. But as we know, there are different rules for broadcast media as there are for other kinds of media.
There's a duty of care as well.
X have a duty of care.
Mm. Facebook have a duty of care.
You wouldn't think it sometimes from the way they run their platforms, no. But...
Yeah. What have you to say about this young man?
I think with X, and there's been a lot of it when the Elon Musk takeover, there definitely has been a drop in the safeguarding, and it's become sort of a free-for-all in many respects.
But they can't get away with it. Surely Commissioner Mann now, is Commissioner Mann going to control this?
Yes, I mean, that's what it should be happening. You know, it's only starting, and they feel that it won't be properly... have the kind of regulatory powers before these European and local elections.
So the teeth have to grow for a while.
They have to grow. Now, I would say on Elon Musk, he's actually weighed in against me on X. So, you know, I don't really have much confidence.
That's a compliment.
My children were delighted.
Did he pick on you?
Yeah. So I think that's why we don't...
What did you do, Senator O'Reilly, to poor Elon Musk?
Disagreed with my political views, and that's... The long
that's
and short
called
of it.
Democracy.
Yeah, that's the long and short of it.
Get over it, Mr. Musk.
I assume that's on the hate speech bill.
That is, yeah. But it brings with it then a huge amount of international, I suppose, hate towards you. That as a result of that, I was on Fox News then. If I was running for, I don't know, some kind of international job where I was running for the whole world, it might be helpful. But it's not necessarily helpful for my own.
You don't really want that on your doorstep. No.
And did Fox News make contact with you?
No, they just put me up without making contact with me, without looking for comment several times. And okay, I don't mind that. That's all part of politics. But I think where the difficulty is. That you're also relying on Elon Musk then to protect you against.
You might get him to give me a ring.
Towards
the end of April, I have a bit of extra time there. I'd love to meet him and say, what's up with you? Just before I let you go, guys, I wanted to just talk about the commercial premises and the situation with it and vacancy rates. Have you had a chance to look at them? But from a rates point of view, from the vacancy point of view, what's the problem?
I think if we look, so Geodirectory and. Yeah. EY Advisory Services publish a report, as they have done every year since 2013, detailing the commercial vacancy rates across the country. So Galway, when it started in 2013, was at 12.8%. It's now at 20.5%, and actually slightly higher if you were to separate city and county.
That's vacant premises.
Yeah, vacant commercial premises.
Sure, all you've just walked down Shop Street and you can see
it.
Yeah.
But actually, there's interesting is maybe the wrong word for this, but there's a pattern within the data that shows Sligo Town is actually the highest. Galway comes in second. Then you have Mayo, Roscommon and Donegal. And what do those five locations have in common? They're all in the West Ireland, and they're all in Connacht.
Yeah.
And the lowest vacancy rates are in Meath, Wicklow and Cork, the East and the South in terms of the city and the South Cork. So there's a pattern there that I think is of concern, because some people have said about the data, the way it's collected is based on air codes. So, you know, the data could do with being refined and being, I suppose, being done in more depth. But I raised this in the Shannons during the week with the Minister for Enterprise, Simon Coveney, and I asked, you know, what did he plan to do about it? And he did say that there was a task force set up in government to look at vacancy, and that they will be reporting in Q2 of this year, next few months.
I'm confused by this, Pauline, and maybe you can help me on this one. I'm confused because the vacancy levels are what they are in commercial, and yet in housing, we can't get enough housing. Can there not be some kind of an overlap?
Yeah, I mean, we're actually seeing this Croí Cónaithe scheme, which is basically a fancy word for saying money being put into vacant homes. And there's been a huge uptake in terms of people pulling down that grant, which is up to 70 grand, and bringing houses back into life, which is what we need for our towns. And so that's been really, really successful. We absolutely need something similar for commercial premises, but the difference is that they're businesses, they have to be profitable, and there are huge pressures on businesses. I think we all recognise that.
And can they not be converted into residential?
But do you want that, Keith? Do you want Shop Street to be just residential?
Yes, like I'd love residential in
Shop
Street.
I think residential
when I was a kid, they were living in Shop Street over the shops.
Well, over the shops, yes, but you still want your commercial units on the ground floor to have businesses in them.
But in Galway City, currently we have more coffee shops. You correct me, you know better than I would. We have coffee shops, and then we have chemists, and we've got vape shops, and then we've got the likes of Anthony Rhines and some of the indigenous
businesses.
Yeah, and you've got McDonald's and you've got Soup Max, you've got all those people.
See, the report detailed the three reasons that they felt there was vacancy. One was changing consumer habits, so that's what you're kind of referring to.
Yeah.
That people want coffee shops and different things, and they're not looking for maybe the closed shop or as many of them as they used to be. The second was hybrid working has had an impact, because there are less people working in the city centre.
Okay.
But the third was the cost of doing business. And we need to look at, if you're setting up a retail shop, you're competing with online retailers, so you've got massive overheads that they don't have. So we need to look at things like rates and cost of business so that it's actually profitable.
Yeah, but online retailers then are causing another problem on the other side, because people are returning goods to them, they're not doing anything with them, they're ending up in landfill, or they're ending up...
I think it's a lot. It's, you know, it's a lot larger. We need to make our towns places that people want to stay in and spend time in. And it includes, you're absolutely right, we need to have people living in the town centre.
We absolutely need that.
Yeah. I think that the work that's been done in the Keys and is going to really, and the docks is really going to change things for Galway, to bring people back into the centre. You know, Cann Station, the redevelopment of Cann Station to five platforms. Yeah. I know people in Oranmore who can't get onto the train with their bikes because it's that jam-packed, they're standing. Yeah. People... When all of these things are addressed and the finances are being put into them, more people will want to spend time in the town. But we can't just put money into or remove commercial rates until the money is being put into local government as well. Yeah. And I think we have a really weak local government in this country, with the 37% of the income to Galway City Council comes from commercial rates. So they it's a rock and a hard place where you can't cut the commercial rates if you're a council when you're relying on it for funding. But this is, it's complex, but I believe that a proper public transport system, proper cycling lanes, we know that Galway people, 88% say that they want more cycle lanes. All of those things.
Okay. But we need the Galway Ring Road as well, Pauline.
Well, we disagree on that.
We need to fix the traffic problems.
Sorry, Senator Chambers, we said we'd leave war behind us half an hour ago. Don't go there.
The conversation kind of led me there, Kiva, you know.
All right, thank you both for joining us. And good luck with the European, and we look forward to working with you for the European elections as well. But Central Lisa Chambers, Central Pauline O'Reilly, John Morley, thank you for joining us today. And short commercial break, and we're back with a preview of sport. Stay tuned. Now, let's preview a very busy weekend of sport with Darren Kelly, who's off to me today. Darren, morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us. Now, Galway United versus Drogheda, Premier Division indeed. Galway have enjoyed a solid start in the top flight, but could do with another big result tonight in Terryland.
Almost certainly, Keith. There, it's two wins, two losses, and they're up in four games, and many would feel that Galway are punching above their weight because they would have come in as relegation candidates, having just been promoted last year. But look, they've done very, very well. Even the two games that they lost against St. Patrick's Athletic and last Monday against Shelburne, they conceded a nearly goal, just couldn't find a way to get an equaliser. So, like, you know, they didn't get points in those occasions, but the wins against Dundalk and Waterford have been fantastic. And look, we knew coming into this year, Keith, that it was going to be, every game is going to feel like a cup final compared to what we've been used to over the last 7 years. And I was talking to John Caulfield during the weekend. We both agreed that the squad really need to step up this year.
We say that every week, and I suppose in both matches, Darren, we brought off five guys off the bench, you know, and it's like that. I suppose the difficulty is always is that we've had a number of new players come into the club. Some of them are new to the league, and you know, the League of Ireland is intense. It's helter skelter for 90 minutes. And it's different to where a lot of these lads have come from. And it takes them a while to adjust. So it's not as simple as just throwing guys in and you expect them to hit the ground running. They can't, because they're not used to the intensity and the ferocity of the games that are in our league. So by giving them game time every week, you're bringing them up to speed, and certainly we can see that with a number of them, that they're getting up to the intensity that we want to play at. So but absolutely the squad is being tested, and you know, as I said, in the last two games we've used 16 players, and it'll be similar again.
The game is at 7:45 in Eamon DC Park tonight, Keith. And just before we finish in soccer, I want to give a shout out. The opening round of the Women's Premier Division is tomorrow night. Galway United away to Athlone Town. That kicks off at the Athlone Town Stadium at 7:30. And one bit of nice news, Heather Looms, 15-year-old, has been promoted from the academy up to the senior women's squad, and she could well be involved in that game tomorrow.
Good honour. Now, Camogie, Galway versus Kilkenny, the Camogie League there. The senior Camogie team are back in action tomorrow, Darren. It's a must-win game, though, to keep their league ambitions intact, isn't it?
Yeah, it is indeed. After the defeat to Tipperary a couple of weeks ago, Kilkenny have had one loss as well. Look, at the end of the day, the priority for the league regards Galway, hard to judge. They are going for three in a row, but it's a big game tomorrow, 2 o'clock in Loughrea. We'll have live coverage here with Tommy Devan and Imelda Hobbins on Galway Bay FM. But Keith, it's a busy weekend at Camogie, full stop. Our intermediate team are heading down to Wexford. It's their final group game. Will do well to make the knockout stages, but it's been a good innings for such a young squad. And speaking of a young team, the Galway Minor Camogie team host Tipperary on Sunday at 2 o'clock, also in St. Brendan's Park in Loughrea. We'll have updates there, and I'd encourage anybody around Loughrea to go see that on Sunday. That's Camogie. I just want to give a quick shout out to ladies football. A lot of Galway involvement in third level finals. I don't have time to go through it all now. Well, best luck today to Mairead Glynn from Dunmore McHale. She's playing for Ulster University against UCC, and Niamh Divley from Kilcairn Clonburn playing for TU Dublin against DCU. They are in the O'Connor Cup semi-finals, which is the highest level. But yesterday, Keith, beat five Galway players winning titles, including Curragh Finn's Hannah McHugh. She captained DCU to win the third level Lagan Cup. That's all taking place down in MTU in Cork.
Now let's go to hurling. Galway versus Dublin, the hurling league there. The former manager and talented Micheál Donoghue returns to town with his Dublin side. What's all this talk about Johnny Glynn back with Galway?
It's gone viral, Keith, since we broke it on Wednesday. Johnny Glynn is back training with the Galway senior hurling team. He's not officially part of the squad. We have to highlight that as well, but wouldn't it be great to have him back? He hasn't been involved in playing-wise since 2019, even though he did transfer back to his club, Ardrahan, from New York last year. So a lot of interest about that around the country. But you mentioned Micheál Donoghue. Well, the last time Galway played Dublin in the league, they've met regularly in the Leinster Championship, was back in 2019 when Galway beat Dublin in Pearse Stadium. Micheál Donoghue was the manager of Galway back then, and of course that was the last time that Johnny Glynn played. Look, there's a big game coming up against Limerick next week, but it is an important fixture for Galway, this game against Dublin. And Keenan Fahey was chatting to Niall Canavan during the week, and they were talking about that, taking the 2025 league into account.
I think the way the league is going to be played out and what happens next year, I think nearly every game is important. So yeah, there's a lot on the line for both teams, and plenty to play for. Yeah,
it's not too far away from championship starts in April. From your own perspective, you're playing in the half back line this year, centre half back the last day. You were playing in wing back as well. How are you relishing the change?
It's going fine. I would have been used to it, I suppose, playing with the club centre back last year, and then all my college hurling would have been in the half back line. So never would have played it really with Galway, but enjoying the opportunity that's been given to me at the moment. And yeah, like everybody's, I suppose, being given opportunity, so it's just trying to take that as it comes. And all the players are putting the shoulder to the wheel at the moment, especially for the league. So just trying to keep that going.
And the family obviously busy at the moment. Yourself and Derek involved with the senior squad. Donna is involved with under-20s as well. So there's plenty of hurling going on in the Fahey household.
There is, for sure, yeah. Grateful to be able to, that all three of us are involved with the Galway panel. It's a huge privilege for all of us, for our family. And you know, we just enjoy playing our hurling, and it's great for all of us to be involved.
Yeah, and of course, that was Keenan Fahey talking to Niall Canavan. Throw in the Pearse Stadium on Sunday, 1:30, live here on Galway BFM, Keith.
Yeah, well, we'll have a quick look at rugby there, will we? Connacht Junior's semi-final there.
Yeah, big weekend of rugby, Keith, it is, and not just regarding the two Ireland teams chasing Grand Slams, but Buccaneers against Dunmore and Connemara against Castlebar. Two big matches taking place at 2 o'clock on Sunday. We'll be live in Dewberry Park for the Dunmore game against Buccaneers. We'll have updates from Connemara against Castlebar. Hopefully we'll get two Galway teams in finals. Also want to give a shout out to Craigs against Galwegians. That's the Connacht Junior 1 C League final. That's in the green on Sunday at 3 o'clock. But even just touching on Ireland there as well, and looking good for two Grand Slams. Plenty of Connacht involvement involved tonight. The under-20s up against England at 7:15. Galwegians duo Finn Tracy and Hugh Gavin involved, and of course the big game in Twickenham tomorrow at 4:45. Bundiaki starts, Finlay Beelam is on the bench. Best of luck to all those, and we'll be getting behind Ireland. And Keith, just before we move on, I want to give a shout out to Tume's Martin McDonagh. He is two fights away from making the Olympics in boxing. He's had a great run so far with two victories. Hard to believe he's only gotten involved in the last few months in the competitive last year in the competitive field. And here he is there now. He goes up tomorrow in super heavyweight, the last 16, against a man called Denis Latipov. He's a Russian now, fighting on behalf of Bahrain. If he wins that tomorrow, he's into the quarterfinal. The semi-finals automatically go to Paris. He fights for Crumlin Boxing Club. But best luck to Tume's Martin McDonagh, and John Mulligan will be keeping an eye on that in the Saturday Sports Show tomorrow.
Good stuff. Listen, over the line tonight, your special one, so you have.
Yeah, very, very special one. Now, it's International Women's Day, as we know, so we've got lots of female sports personalities looking ahead to the big games. And just to give you a feel of it, Keith, Ailish O'Reilly, the Galway forward, will preview Galway's Camogie game against Kilkenny. We also have the Camogie team being announced around 8:30 tonight. Fiona Wynn, former Galway manager, but All-Ireland winning footballer with Galway back in 2004. She is part of the Masters team that are taking on Australia. The lads in in earlier on, and Fiona will be in the ladies' match at 2 o'clock in Charlestown tomorrow. Pat Cunanan is in the men's over 50s and Brian Keneally in the men's over 40s. She'll be with us to look ahead to that. Niamh Heffernan will be chatting to us. Herself and Sianna Ní Curran aiming to make history tomorrow as the first Galway pair to win the All-Ireland Senior Handball's double title. We wish them the best of luck. We'll be hearing from the Galway United Women's Camp ahead of their game against Athlone Town. Julianne Russell will be chatting to us. We might have more guests as well, Keith, but just before I go, the men have not been forgotten. Our live match tonight, as we mentioned earlier on, at 7.45 in Eamon Teasy Park, is Galway United against Drogheda United.
Racing-wise, what are we up to?
Racing-wise, Greyhounds in Galway from 7.50 this evening, Keith, but horse racing from Dundalk starting at 4.40.
All right, loads more on the station. Stay right through, stay tuned right through indeed. That is it for today, and a lot of comments coming in about Biden and Biden and more Biden. I don't know. I really don't know where it's all going to go. Somebody just said here, Keith, with the huge social media scene, will you tell candidates there's no need for posters or leaflet drops? Wasting public money. It's a terrible for the environment also. That's it for today. John is with you next week. I'm off all of next week, Sam. I'm back with you on the 19th, which is Tuesday week. So John is with you. And then we're with you on Tuesday week from 19th right through the 12th of April each and every day. Except, I think, Good Friday. Maybe we're there Good Friday as well. We haven't really decided, have we yet? So feel free to keep in contact with John next week. Comments at galwaybfm.ie. That's comments at galwaybfm.ie. Stand by. Roland is coming to you live with the crew from the Aran Islands. It's going to be great fun. The weather isn't too bad out there too. I was looking at it on the satellite earlier on, but it's going to be a bit of fun. That is it for today. We thoroughly enjoyed the programme. We hope that you did as well. Don't forget to join John next week right through Monday to Friday. I'm back with you on Tuesday week as well, live from Studio One at 9 o'clock. The Best Of goes out tomorrow and Sunday morning as well, so tune in for that. John Morley produced and did an excellent job. Thanks to Fiona for taking your comments, but from yours really, Keith Finnegan, and I'll talk to you on Tuesday week. Have yourselves a good and a very safe time, and we look forward to being back with you then. Bye-bye.